Radio.
The missionary mandate of the parish. Christian life embedded in our neighborhoods. A presentation by Dr. Susan Timoney at the Proclaim 2016 conference. Brought to you by Cradio and XT3.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Excellencies, pastors and priests, and brothers and sisters in the Lord. I'm so delighted to be part of this conference, and so particularly, Bishop Comencelli, thank you for the invitation to Praise Fest and the other things going on here today. One of the things that drew me to pursue theology and service to the church is my passion for helping people discover that what they hunger for most can be found in our parishes, in communion with Jesus Christ, and in the church. I have a second reason for being delighted to be invited to Australia. My husband, Joseph, is Austrian by birth, from Vienna. And it's not unusual when this comes up in conversation, my geographically challenged American neighbors will say, "Wow, Australia, that's so far away." And I try to save them by saying, "Well, you know, with flying, it makes it so easy." But then invariably they'll say, "The beaches, I hear the beaches there are fabulous." And I have to say, you know, there are a lot of really beautiful things in Austria, but beaches are not one of them. So to be here gives me a chance to see what life might have been like if I actually had married an Australian. I love parish life. How many of you love your parish? Can we see a show of hands? One of the most delightful parts of my job is working with our parishes to increase their capacity for evangelization. And I have never been to a parish where I've not heard people say, "I love my parish." Sometimes I'm there, frankly, because the parish is a bit of a mess. And inevitably, someone will say, "Susan, really, our parish is a great parish." People love their parishes because they have found a spiritual home. And when we find a parish home, it becomes part of our life. Fellow parishioners become like family members, and parish celebrations are as important as family celebrations. My father, with the exception of military service, never lived more than 6 kilometers from the parish in which he was baptized, made his first communion and his confirmation, in the parish where he baptized myself and my 8 siblings. When the parish merged with another parish, I asked him how he felt about this. And he said, "It doesn't matter how it develops as long as I can be buried from there." Happily, we were able to do that for him. I, on the other hand, have lived in 4 continents. I've lived in an Athabascan Indian village on the Yukon River in Alaska, and I've lived in the center of Rome. And I have never not felt at home in a parish where I've gone to Mass. I can still remember vividly the day I could pray the rosary in that wicked fast Italian of the senior women who prayed the rosary before Mass, and I felt like I finally belonged. It's because this feeling is deeply rooted in the theology of who we are as the people of God. We are family. We are sons and daughters of the one God, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, deeply connected through the Eucharist. In the Eucharist, we become the body of Christ. St. John Paul II said in his exhortation on the mission and role of the laity, "The parish is not principally a structure, a territory, or a building, but rather the family of God, a fellowship of fire with a unifying spirit." In fact, the Greek word parish comes from parokia, means those living near or beside. And so in its very origin, it calls us to be neighbors, to be family. But it also has a second meaning, which says something about this commitment to the new evangelization. It talks about the parish being the home of resident aliens, that is to say, people of a pilgrim church, that this place is a home, but on our way to our ultimate home, which is heaven. And so today, we're going to focus on the mission of the parish to the larger community in which the parish is rooted. We're talking about the mission of the parish to be the church living in the midst of the homes of her sons and daughters. And not just living, but embedded in the life of the community. Embedded is a word that caught my attention for the way the media used it in covering the wars of the last 20 years. They spoke of journalists and photographers embedded with soldiers. And it helped listeners to grasp in a really vivid way what it was like to see the soldier in battle from minute to minute or day to day. But I want to use this word embedded to ask a question. What do our parishes need to be doing if they are truly embedded in the lives of our neighborhood? Now, for Catholic members of the parish, Dominican preacher Father Joseph Fox talks about the parish as a stable point of reference for the church's daily life of believers at the level of the neighborhood. And I think many of us can know that we're comforted to know that whether we're at the parish or not, Mass is being celebrated daily, children are being formed in the faith, parishioners are going out to minister to those who are most vulnerable in our communities. And these are all very good things. But in thinking about tools to be able to talk about what does it mean for the parish to make a contribution to the larger neighborhood, I want to first reflect on two attitudinal practices. Because when we speak of the missionary mandate of the parish in light of the vision of the new evangelization, we see a role for the parish in the life of our neighborhoods. We see the opportunity for our parishes to be inviting and welcoming in being the bridge for people's encounter with the living Christ. And we do that most obviously through worship and education and in service. But what about the role our parishes may be able to play as a place of gathering in the community? Do our parishes make a contribution to the civic light of the community, or do our parishes sometimes seem like they're a members-only organization? In Washington, D.C., we're undergoing this huge building boom, and I was talking with a pastor who within the next 5 years is going to have 10,000 new residential units within his parish boundaries. And some of them have been built, and so I said to him, "Hey, are you seeing new neighbors coming to church?" And he said, "I'm not seeing them come to church, but their children are joining the parish scout group." And so for him, the scout group becomes a door to encounter these new neighbors and to invite. We know that many of our parishes host things like AA meetings or town meetings. But more importantly, rather than simply having a public space that people can use, those opportunities become doors for people to encounter something about the life of the parish, for people to be able to encounter something of the risen Christ who's present there. We know that one of the manifestations of the new evangelization is this idea that people come into our parishes for weddings, for funerals, and for baptisms, and it may be the only time they've been in a church in years. And so the question that we really want to ask ourselves is there something that might draw them back to our parishes? In the worship, in the preaching, in the extended implicit invitation that there's something more that they can experience in our parishes. What I'm trying to say is that the new evangelization calls us to think about parishes as serving the whole of our neighborhoods. We have a saying in the United States that the parish boundaries don't determine who goes to church, but rather who the parish is called to serve. The parish is embedded in a neighborhood or in a community to serve everyone who moves and lives and works within that community. One of my favorite images of parish comes from St. John the 23rd. He speaks of the parish as a village fountain. Now, village fountains are not so typical in the U.S., but I had the great privilege when I was doing my doctoral studies to live in Rome in Piazza Navona, home of one of the world's great fountains. But any of you who have traveled to Rome know that there's a fountain around almost every corner in the neighborhoods. And we know that those fountains were incredibly important to the life of the community. Before the days of running water, people would go each day to get water for drinking, for cooking, for cleaning. But even more importantly, people would go to get the news of the community, to visit with neighbors, to see what was going on in the neighborhood. And even today, that beautiful tradition of the afternoon passeggiata, or walk in the neighborhood, usually ends with people gathering at the fountain to watch the world go by, to catch up on neighborhood gossip. St. John the 23rd suggests that a parish can be the village fountain to which all would have recourse to their thirst. And I think this resonates for us today because of the spiritual notion of thirst. We thirst for God, and for all of us here, we know that Jesus quenches that thirst, and so we desire to drink from the fountain of the Christian spiritual life. We also know that we live in a world that thirsts. In an interview last winter with the American news journal Crux, Archbishop Anthony Fisher spoke about the increasing secularization of Australian society. He said, "We face some very big questions going forward, whether we're going to keep secularizing and pushing God to the margins in our communities and individual lives, or are we going to actually rediscover the importance of God, both for our individuals and for our communities?" And he went on to say, and here I think we begin to see what an attitude of an evangelizer looks like. He said, "I'm excited about the opportunity to present the gospel to people who are hungry for it. It's not that they've had bad experiences of the church or that they've rejected the gospel. Many just have never been presented with it. And it's often warmly received and openly received by such people who aren't coming with issues of anger toward the church or left or right polarization that some people within the church suffer from, or preconceptions that almost vaccinate them to the church." And so I think what this raises for us is the reality of an attitudinal shift on many of our parts, that people who aren't part of the church aren't necessarily against the church. One of the great gifts of St. John Paul II's teaching on the new evangelization is that we really have three groups of people that we're addressing. That as a church, we continue to address those who don't know Jesus Christ, have never been introduced to him. And that calls for one kind of language. And we know that there are people who have been hurt or who are alienated from the church. And that calls for another kind of language. And what we're about in these days here is that there's a third group of people who have been evangelized, who are active in our parishes, but don't necessarily see themselves as evangelizers. And that's yet a third kind of language. And so what do I mean by that? In the Archdiocese of Washington, we have two large-scale initiatives that are based at going out into the world and inviting anyone to encounter. The initiative at Christmas is specifically designed for the first group of people, those who may not have a relationship with the Lord. And it's called Find the Perfect Gift. And we play off of this idea that everyone is gift shopping at Christmas. And ultimately, what the church has to offer is the perfect gift in Jesus Christ. And so we try to build on the image of gift. In Lent, we have a campaign called The Light Is On For You. That alone, right, is to reach to those Catholics who are inactive and to invite them to consider to coming back to the sacrament of reconciliation. And so while people who didn't grow up going to confession might not make the association with The Light Is On, it absolutely resonates with those who grew up going to confession in the confessionals that dot many of our churches. And so what we begin to see is parishes need to be able to think about and respond to and be vigilant about providing a place for all people of the community to come and to see. But to make sure that the ministry and the mission we're about is that which God has called us to. What is the gospel asking for your parish now, for the life of your neighborhood? And who is the gospel calling out to? In the language of pastoral ministry today, it's embracing this idea of the new evangelization, which is often described as helping move our parishes from a maintenance mode to a mission mode, meaning that we absolutely need to be proud of all the work that our parishes do in planning beautiful and meaningful worship experiences, in educating youth and adults, in practicing charitable works, in responding to crises within our community. When people call and say, I want to know more about the Catholic Church, we have a program in which they can do that. And it takes a lot of work to keep all of these good things running. But what we're being challenged to do by Pope Francis, as we were by Pope Benedict and as we were by St. John Paul II, is to ask ourselves honestly, are we better at keeping our parishes running than we are at going out and inviting others to come in and to encounter the risen Christ? Now think about this. In Scripture, Jesus did not find a place to open a school of discipleship and then wait for people to come. Jesus was always on the move. He was on the seashore inviting fishermen. He was looking up into the tree and seeing Zacchaeus and inviting him. He was headed into anyone's home who was willing to open the door and share a meal with him. If you have some free time today, begin to read the Gospel of Mark with an eye to how much you see Jesus on the move, traveling, encountering, going out and inviting people to come and see. Going out and inviting people to say, stay with me. And in fact, this is the very mandate that we receive each and every time we gather for the Eucharist. How does absolutely every Mass end? Go forth, go and announce. This is our mandate, that we, particularly lay women and men, become the very people who embed the Christian life in the life of our communities, who live our lives in a way that we point back to the risen Christ we encounter in the Eucharist. We are the eyes, the hands, and the feet, the mouth of Jesus at home and on our jobs and in the workplace. But I think the real challenge that we're facing is that we have to become more intentional about inviting. So I have a homework assignment for you to take away. When you're back at work on Monday or back with your neighbors and they say, hey, what did you do this weekend? Don't just say, oh, you know what, I went to a church thing, and hope that they don't ask you any more questions. Say, I was at this great conference and I heard the most interesting idea, and say something of what you learned here. Or say, you know what, I heard the craziest thing. What do you think about this? Give people a chance to want to know more about why this was so important to you that you cleared 2 or 3 or 3.5 days of your schedule to be a part of this. I had an encounter a number of years back with my neighbor. He was out walking his dog, and I was doing some gardening. And he stopped, and he said to me, I hear you work for the Catholic Church. And I said, I do, thinking, okay, what's coming next? And he said, do you believe in it? And I said, I do. And he said, do you believe all of it? And I thought, how do I respond to that? That's like a totally loaded question, right? And I said, you know what? I do. I believe that the Catholic Church has the best answers to the most important questions. Now, I totally stole that line from a book called How Do You Spell God? And it was written by a Catholic priest and a Jewish rabbi, which said exactly the role that religion plays in the life of the community is to help people find the best answers to the biggest questions. Since that time, and that was more than 9 years ago, anytime something Catholic is going on, he and his dog come out, and if I'm there, he begins a conversation. Well, what about this Pope Francis? Well, what about this decision? I don't know where it goes. I don't know what he goes home and continues to think about. But I know that for me, someone for whom he's intrigued by this idea that I can be committed to the Catholic Church and that I can say it's the most important thing in my life. But if we want to be evangelizers embedded in the community, we really need to draw from and engage our missionary consciousness that was given to us by the grace of baptism. And we have to be able to assess our parish's capacity for welcoming. Catholics who see themselves as missionary realize that Mass sends them out. We go out to be the face of Christ and to encounter the face of Christ in others. Pope Francis says it best in Evangelii Gaudium when he talks about that the church is a church that goes forth, is a community of missionary disciples who take the first steps, who are involved and supportive, who bear fruit and rejoice. An evangelizing community, he says, knows that the Lord has taken the initiative because he's loved us first. And therefore, we can move forward boldly to take the initiative to go out to others. One of the things that I challenge my brothers and sisters in the U.S. is that sometimes I feel like Catholic evangelizers sort of take their cue from the Secret Service, who protect the president, you know, who are there, but they're silent, and they're watching what's going on, but they don't say anything, and they try to be as anonymous as possible. And I think that's the way a lot of my Catholic brothers and sisters are, because we have at the one and the same time this great gift of an institution. And so we can sit back and say, oh, heck, people know what the Catholic Church is about. It has schools and hospitals and daycare centers, and there's parishes in almost every neighborhood. So we get it. But the fact of the matter is that it's not the schools and the institutions and the buildings that help someone encounter Christ. It's what goes on in them, and it's the people who work in them who are the face of Christ to others. And so I think that it's so important to us that we make the commitment to form adults to be missionary disciples, that we are the evangelizers in our homes and in our neighborhoods where our priests are not typically present in the course of the day. We don't generally find the pastor at breakfast with us on Sunday morning when we're trying to convince the kids they really do want to go to Mass. We don't tend to have the priest necessarily at the barbecue when someone asks about that ridiculous decision that was just made by the church. And so what the new evangelization has done is to say we as lay people are co-responsible with our bishops and with our priests in being the evangelizing disciples of the church. Pope Benedict said it really beautifully. He said he feels that the great gift that we have to bring in this day and age is that Christians are people of hope, that we are heralds of hope, and that the world is desperately seeking something to hope in. When Pope Benedict visited in the early 2000s, Washington, D.C., we had banners hung all over the city that said, "People with hope live differently." And I think that's always a great starting point, to ask people, in what have they placed their hope? And is that a strong enough place to be able to give them a sense of hope in light of what's happening in the world? I was so struck in an RCIA class when I asked a young woman what brought her to RCIA. She was a young adult, about 25, and she said, "I never have serious conversations with my friends." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "You know, we barely talk past the last movie we saw or the last manicure pedicure that we had." She said, "I'm desperate for serious conversation." Sometimes it's that simple. But Pope Francis goes a little deeper in highlighting our missionary nature. He said the new evangelization calls for a much deeper personal involvement by every Christian, that we should be challenged here and now to be actively engaged in evangelization, to go out and to share that love that God has first shared with us. He says every Christian is a missionary to the extent that she or he has encountered the love of God in Jesus Christ. And so we no longer say that we are disciples and missionaries, but rather we say we are always missionary disciples. And then he goes on to say, if you're not convinced by me, look at scriptures. Look at the reaction after people encountered the Messiah. The Samaritan woman became a missionary immediately after speaking with Jesus. And many Samaritans came to believe on the strength of her testimony. To St. Paul, after his encounter with Jesus Christ, he went out and evangelized the world. And so Pope Francis said, so what are we waiting for? If you're waiting for confidence and skills, then I suggest you come to my workshop this afternoon, where we're going to take up that in more specific ways. But I come to my fourth tool, and the fourth tool that helps our parishes move from maintenance to mission is that we're able to assess the quality of our encounter. So I have another quiz for you. I want you to take a minute and think about the grocery store nearest to you. Does it reflect the people who are in your pews in the parish? So do the people in your grocery store look like the people in the pew? If we are missionary disciples, if our parishes are embedded in the life of our neighborhood, our neighbors should be in our pews. And if one group doesn't look like the other group, we need to ask why not. Are our ministries not meeting people's needs? Do people not even know that there's a parish there? Is the neighborhood changing and the parish is not? A second piece of this is to think about what is the experience of a newcomer to your parish for the first time if they walk through the front door of the church. So if I were to come to your parish on Sunday, brand new, what would I see? What kinds and signs of welcome would I see? Would I meet people who are welcoming me? Would I meet people who are on the lookout for visitors to welcome? Would I see information that would be helpful to a newcomer? Or would I see something like, yams are hosting a happy hour, come and join us? And I would pause and say, well, I have no idea what a yam is. And sadly, I'm not a yam, because yam stands for young adult ministry, having a happy hour. I was visiting two parishes last summer, and it was near the time for registration for religious education classes. And one church had a poster in the vestibule that said, the deadline is near. You must do the following, and there was a checklist, or your child will not have a place in class. And then at the other parish not far away, there was a big sign that said, welcome, we're looking forward to learning with your child. Now, which parish are you more likely to stay and to encounter? And you know, I want to say something to the DREs who are here. It's a desperate time of year, right? Trying to get folks registered, trying to get the kids in class, to make sure you have enough teachers. But I think that we who spend a lot of time in that world need to step back. And isn't this what Pope Francis has been saying? Is that we can't welcome too much. That we have to always remember that people are coming and looking for something, by way of welcoming, by way of encounter, by way of something of the face of the Lord. Now, think about where you see something of the parish beyond the parish campus, out in the neighborhood. Is there some presence or announcement of the parish where people gather in the community? Is there some link between the parish and the other events of the community? So flyers at a coffee shop, or we're big in the States right now with email listservs for particular neighborhoods. And it really struck me that I, nor anyone else, has never posted on that listserv that announced everything from free tickets to the concert, to crimes that have been committed in the neighborhood, to complaints that people have about other people's trash cans. I've never seen anyone say, come join us for Christmas Mass, or come join us for the Sabbath celebration, or come join us to meet our new pastor. Why is it that we don't use those things where there's news about the community out to talk about what they can encounter at our parishes? Is that part of the regular way in which we do ministry? What these questions I hope do for you is to help you think about the caliber of the missionary consciousness and outreach of your parish. Because I think that the first assessment that we're called to do, if we want to take up Pope Francis's call to be parishes which are flexible, and I'll have to say, if I ever have a chance to meet him and to ask him something, I'm going to ask him what his idea of a flexible parish is. Because I don't know if you've ever been in a parish who's been trying to change the mass schedule. It's the least flexible group of people I've ever seen. What I think he means about flexible is a little what Cardinal World talked about yesterday. Flexible and adaptive. That is to say that we can, in a sense, read the sense of the community and be able to respond to the needs. And so it raises up the importance of pastoral planning, that this missionary consciousness, in some ways, is calling some of our parishes to really do ministry in a different way. In other ways, it may be calling our parishes to say, let's really build on the strength or the niche that we have found in our local community in order to be able to better serve people. And the first thing that I think we learn about a parish that is missionary is first that evangelization is not the work of a single committee or just the pastor and pastoral staff, that it ought to be the mission of every ministry, that every ministry should be able to reflect on and identify how people encounter the Lord in and through that ministry. I was asked to give a presentation at a parish that had a really vibrant social ministry. And they wanted to reflect on what was different about their social ministry programs than the Red Cross. And I thought that that was such a great way to ask the question. Because what they were asking is, they were doing a lot of good social work in and through the parish. But there's a lot of other agencies in our communities that do great social work. And so what they wanted to do was assess the caliber of their ministries in light of those ministries being a doorway for the people they serve to come and to join the community of faith. That it, at another parish, they began to think about, they're a parish in one of the poorest neighborhoods in the city, and they have an enormous food program. And so when they were wrestling with the question, how can we take that opportunity when so many people are on campus, the parish campus, in order to receive food, how can they also have an encounter with the Lord? And so one of the first things that they thought about was, what if we opened the doors of the church and had soft music playing? And so that while people were waiting, they could go in and sit in the church and enjoy some peace and quiet. Another group suggested that their pastor was a really powerful preacher. And they were in a part of the city that has a growing number of large African-American evangelical churches. And they were honestly able to say, you know, seeing Father out on the street, you wouldn't necessarily know that he's a powerful preacher, because he's an older Irish white priest. And so they put out DVDs of his homilies so they could take them home and listen to them in hopes that hearing that word would invite them to want to come and learn more at the parish. As they began to live more vividly their Catholic identity, a beautiful thing happened. The pastor was working with eighth graders on their final retreat before they were leaving school to go on to high school. And he asked this group of predominantly non-Catholic children, what did they want to do on their retreat day? What were their top three things they wanted to build the retreat around? And do you know what the number one answer was? Adoration. They wanted the peace and silence of being with the Lord in adoration. And so the opening of those doors and letting the community know that anyone was welcomed to sit in the beauty and the quiet of the church began to be an evangelizing mission of a spiritual nature. Any of the ministries we do obviously want to help people deepen their knowledge of the faith. And any work of mercy that we want to do, we want to do it in a way that invites people to Christ. And so what we've developed to help parishes begin to do the kind of pastoral planning that moves them from maintenance to mission is what we call the indicators of vitality. And the indicators of vitality are an assessment that we invite pastoral councils and parishes to do that ask 12 simple questions in these five core areas of parish life: worship, education, community, service, and administration. I'm not going to go through all 12 questions in each area, but you can copy down the website there where we have it all laid out. But what I want to do is give you a feel for how we did this, because the questions are simple enough that we felt most parishioners would be able to have an opinion or answer them. But it would also help the parish begin to see where the strengths were that were worth building upon, and where maybe were there some ministries in need of change. So, for example, in the area of worship, one of the questions we ask is, does the current mass schedule meet the needs of your neighbors? And one of the things that we're finding is that Sunday evening masses are becoming far more popular than the Saturday vigil. And that raises an important question, because in many cases, we have just one priest in the parish. And so it's not always the answer to simply add on a mass. But if Sunday evening is the time when more people are able to come to mass, how can we maybe adjust the mass schedule? Or can we work with neighboring parishes to give people as many opportunities as possible to get to mass on the weekend? In the area of education, does the parish offer all ages a variety of experiences to learn and grow in the faith? One of the most exciting ministries that's developing is a men's ministry. And most of our men's groups meet between 5:30 a.m. and 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. And that's because it's the normal time that they're commuting Monday through Friday. And so that period on Saturday morning before the kids' soccer schedules start and the shopping and all the errands are done is a time that the men said we're up and we generally aren't busy. And it was really interesting because one pastor said, I'm willing to give it a try for a month, a 5:30 a.m. Bible study ending with Mass at 7. And he said, but I'm not doing it for 10. So we need to have 25 over the course of a month for this to become a going concern. At the end of the first month, they had 150 men who had made the commitment. And so how do we make our parish schedules more flexible? I know what we're experiencing is our parish's life still revolves around the experience of parishes in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that relied a lot on moms who were at home and not working, on kids who were active in the parish Catholic school, and in a time where we have to say people were just less busy. And so I think it's very fair to say people are more busy, and lifestyles have changed. And so how can the parish adapt? Because in my conversation with people, it's not so much they don't want to take advantage of learning more about the faith, of making a commitment to adoration, of being more active on the parish pastoral council. It's that they think those things are a luxury and not a necessity. And so I think the way in which we can build the bridge to be able to quench their thirst at the waters of grace in the sacraments is for us to be able to exercise some of this flexibility in the way we do programming. But it's enormously challenging. In the area of service, are we going to the periphery? Who are the most vulnerable people in our community, and how are we addressing their needs? And Pope Francis has really helped me think about the periphery in a completely different way. Because when you first hear it, you think, okay, he really wants us to be working with those who are newly arrived. He wants us to find a way to take more refugees into our communities. But I think in the context of what we're talking about this morning, he's saying, who is on the periphery in your community? And for a good friend of mine, who's the pastor of a parish in one of the wealthiest communities in the United States, his periphery is starting a domestic violence program because he said there's an inordinate amount of domestic violence in his parish between married couples and also with people who hire people to be nannies and cooks and servants and maybe are not treating them as they ought to be treated. And so the periphery is very different in that case than it may be for another parish. So are our service needs meeting those who are at the periphery? In some cases, it may be our young adults who are the periphery in our community, who don't know how to find their way into parish life. In the area of community, how are we building communion and fellowship? How are we celebrating the life of the community and helping people realize that the greatest benefit of being gathered around the Eucharistic table is that we are in communion with one another, that gathering of people at the parish become family? And then in the area of stewardship and administration, what is the best match of our resources to our ministries? And so here's one of the great challenges I think we have. Inevitably, we don't have enough material resources to do all the ministry that we would like to do. And sometimes parishes face the really difficult moment where they need to cut back. And so rather than saying, well, we're going to cut 10% from every ministry, or we're going to cut out this ministry, I propose that we just change the conversation and say, can we come together and discern and to pray where the Lord is drawing our parish community? And in answering that question, what resources do we need to be able to respond to what the Lord is calling us to? It's a much more hope-filled way of taking those limited resources and making sure they're being directed in the area that will bear most fruit or where the parish is most in need. The other thing that I think is important to say is moving our parishes from maintenance to mission is not a short-term goal. There's no perfect program that's going to solve all the problems. And it's not even just a focus from today to proclaim 2018. Theologians say about the Second Vatican Council that it takes 100 years for the work of a council to bear fruit in the life of the church. And so even with the Second Vatican Council, we're just at middle age. Pope Paul VI said this at the beginning of the council, at the beginning of his time in overseeing the work of the council, that the objective of the Second Vatican Council could be summed up in one statement: to make the church of the 20th century ever better fitted to proclaiming the gospel to the people of the 20th century. And I say, now is our turn to step up and to claim our co-responsibility in making the church of the 21st century better fitted for proclaiming the gospel to the people of the 21st century. I believe in our parishes. I believe that our parishes who live closest to the people are the places where this will happen. Pope Francis says this: the parish is not an outdated institution. Precisely because it possesses this great flexibility, it can assume quite different contours depending on the openness and missionary creativity of the pastor and of the community. And he goes on to say, while certainly not the only institute which evangelizes, if the parish proves capable of self-renewal and constant adaptivity, it continues to be the church living in the midst of her homes, of her sons and daughters. Can the church say amen? Amen? Amen. Thank you.
That was Dr. Susan Timoney with The Missionary Mandate of the Parish: Christian Life Embedded in Our Neighborhoods. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org. www.parish.org.au.